How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick, and I must apologize on behalf of my good friend Ronald. You know, he's become a student, so he's often bunking our recording sessions to go out on the town.
Don't blame me, my friend. Don't blame me. I've always been ready to record.
Yeah. So tell me, Ronnie, is it good being a student? Hey, lots of parties, waking up late in class.
Like I said to you previously, it's nothing of that sort. It is very busy and I'm very tired. And I was like, lay down in my bed now and I put on an episode on Netflix thinking, you know, I'm going to relax tonight. Only for you to bloody well message me and say, sit in front of your computer, we have work to do.
Yeah, well, I've got to keep you busy and out of mischief. I don't know how well that's going that side. So you're telling me it's not like our student days back as undergrads, hey, where we had Hatfield Square and Liberty.
Listen, just before you carry on, speak for yourself. I was a diligent student. I went to every single class all the time, every day.
Yeah, you engineering students, hey. Test week, because we're so important, we need the time off to study, we write all these things.
I don't understand. We've had this conversation many times. The amount of hours that each of us spent in class, we still, with engineering week, we still went to more class than you. So math is math.
Math is math. Listen to this, eh? Well, on the note of class, yes, I've had such a nice drive to work the last week and a bit. Because all the school kids have been on holiday. And today, I don't know where they all come from, Ronnie, what rocks they crawl out of. But holy moly, the traffic was a nightmare again on the roads today. So I think it's perfect timing that we're back with the show. Hopefully it helps some people on their trip to work tomorrow, because yeah, not enjoying that with all the traffic that's out there now. Adding rain and the robots that don't work.
Robots, I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah, it's... I was on the phone with Dill, our mate, who lives in Budapest, and he heard me hooting at someone. He's like, ah, South Africa. You know, it's the perfect storm.
No, it's but not South Africa. It's you, my friend. You need to get that a check.
Yeah, that's a discussion for another time, Ronnie. But on to more important things then. We've got some rugby to chat about. This weekend, there was the Challenge and Champions Cup. Just a disclaimer for any of our Stormers fans that are listening to the show. No, your team was not in either competition this weekend, so that's why we won't be covering anything for you guys.
Same, we're Stormers.
Ronnie, we're going to mix it up and just look at a couple of games through both tournaments here. So starting off then with Edinburgh, they got a 24-12 point win over the Lions, knocking the Lions out of the tournament. 4-2, 17-0 down at halftime for the Lions. Not going so well for the Joburg outfit, hey, Ronald.
Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. We spoke about the fact that, you know, there are a lot of players that have been sort of dumped and let go from various perceived top sides, and they end up at the Lions, and they're all working extremely hard to play well as a team. And so that's kind of what I've at least become accustomed to see them. Playing well, playing strong as a team, but this definitely wasn't the case. And it was very disappointing.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're struggling across the board now. In the Challenge Cup, they were doing quite well in the URC. They're now struggling in the URC as well. And it's looking to be a bit of a dismal season loading for the guys from Joburg now. Likely not going to qualify for the top eight, which will see them then pull through to the Challenge Cup again next year. But the biggest struggle here is it's a young Lions side, and now we see them constantly fighting for comebacks, and that's not sustainable in competitions of this duration where, you know, you're constantly having in the second half to overexert yourself to try and overcome, you know, the deficits and the tries that have been scored against you. And that over a season that's 16, 17, 18 games long really, really isn't sustainable at all, Ronnie. I mean, it took Wes Coulson less than 2 minutes to score the opening try against them, and they were behind ever since.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't say that that's an issue of sustainability. That's a bit of a concern that the Lions can't seem to kick off a game, start a game off well. I think chasing down games and learning how to play from behind, that builds a bit of strength, and the players will be better off for that. But I think as a whole, it is concerning that they don't start off as we'd expect, you know, an opening try by Wes Goosen. You know, that puts Edinburgh on the front foot. And that's that mental challenge that you're basically playing a full game now, but you're 7 points behind to begin with. And Yeah, I suppose that's ultimately, I think it will make the players a little bit stronger mentally, but yeah, it is unfortunate if you're a Lions fan.
Yeah, but on your point, then I'm curious to hear from you. You say games like this make them mentally stronger, but at what point does a string of losses actually deteriorate a player's confidence to the point where it's not mental strength or fortitude playing for the comeback? You're actually damaging your career.
Well, look, I think anybody that knows anything, South African sides haven't been as successful as we would have hoped in a lot of the domestic competitions. Yet we're back-to-back world champions from our national side. So, you don't necessarily need strong domestic sides in order to have a strong national side. So a lot of these players, which are fantastic Springbok players and possibles for the Springbok side, if they just think clearly, they'll realize that. Their performance, their team performance, and the results at a domestic level doesn't necessarily translate to how it's going to be for the Springboks. But sure, look, it's not nice to see. We want our South African sides to do well. We want them to step up. And yeah, I'd like to think that it's been a while since our teams have been struggling for a long time now. So they hopefully should be used to the fact that used to losing, which is such a sad thing to say.
Well, you say that we should be used to losing, but let's go over then to France, where the Bulls got a 32 to 22 point win over Bayonne. I think that was quite wild from the Bulls, who have tended not to prioritize these competitions. They named a very strong team for this fixture, number of Springboks on the bench as well. But this is now the inverse for me, because here you've got to give a shout out to the Bulls' defense. They had everything thrown at them. They were really making their tackles, getting stuck into it, and, imposing themselves on the game.
Yeah, I must say, I didn't expect this to actually happen. I actually expected the Lions to win their game and the Bulls to lose theirs, but yeah, fantastic. Bulls stepping it up. And like you say, a strong side was sent over. It's good to see. It's nice to see. And beating Bayonne in Bayonne's home ground is not an easy thing to do. They've been quite a successful side in the top 14 this year. A strong side, beating a lot of strong side teams. Yeah, I look, I think they decimated La Rochelle that I was, remember I was at that game a few months ago. And that was very, very surprising as well. Bulls, what can we say? Very happy, very proud of them.
So, I mean, the opening try in this game coming in the 16th minute through Dervon Williams, some good enterprising play from the Bulls, good linking play there. One player I'd like to maybe get your opinion on is David Creel, Ronnie, because he's now playing at centre. He can play at fullback. He's got a lot of talent in him, kicking when he's been called upon to do so. Is he on the Bok radar?
Always like it when you pick these players and then put a question mark there, Bok radar. Look, I'm sure he definitely is. I think Rassie casts his net very wide, and he's got a lot of names on the depth chart for every position, and I'm sure David Krill's name has featured. But at this stage, I think we have other centers and other utility backs that probably be a step or two ahead of David Krill on the pecking order. So I agree. He's probably one of those players you can rely on that's quite stable in the team, regularly featuring well and not really screwing up. So yeah, if he just continues doing what he's doing, he's probably going to get a shot at Springbok level.
Yeah, I think he's got potential for a Bok call up. I mean, he was included in the alignment camps that went forward, and that's definitely a good sign for him. Consistency is key when you come to this, and then I think his versatility also weighing in his favor, and especially with some of the tests that the Springboks have scheduled this year, I think it's a good opportunity for younger players to put their hands up to get exposure to that test platform. While maybe some of the premier players are getting a bit of rest and recuperation in that box system.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Ronnie, the Bulls getting 10 scrum feeds to Bayonne's 2 in this game, and they use that as a really strong platform for their attack. Time and time again, we're seeing South African teams reverting to this traditional strength and it getting them over the line. Why do we ever deviate from it?
Well, when the Springboks try to change the game plan, try to play a little bit more expansive without earning the right to play expansive. We lost a couple of very shameful games against Italy. And I suppose we can go as far back as the Brighton miracle. I know some people call it that. And that's when the Springboks try and move away from it. I agree. We're 10-man rugby, and we're earning our right to send the ball wide now, which is this extra dimension, which we've only just started to introduce. So first you do the basics, then you can start playing with a bit of flair.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. But how good was it in this Bulls game to see the likes of Johan Kroosen, Cameron Hanekom, Marcel Kutsia, Ruan Nokia, all making it back in time for the real grunt of the season and lining up nicely for some form ahead of the Springbok call-ups. So that was at least good to see.
Yeah, so are you saying that because you've been quite critical of Hurson for some time now? So, do you really mean it when you say you're happy?
No. You called my bluff, Ronnie. So the Bulls will now face Edinburgh in the quarterfinals. That's a clash of the two URC sides. Hopefully, the Bulls can get this one through and then they'll have a semi-final waiting for them. Over to a game I found interesting this weekend was Toulon 72 to 42 for Saracens. A year ago, it would have been unheard of for Saracens to lose a game like this. They had the Vunipolos, they had Owen Farrell, they had a number of top line players in that team. And now without them, they seem to really be struggling because it's only a 30 point difference, but that's a hell of a score. 72 points, that's a lot of points to concede.
Yeah, I always find it interesting with the French sides. I mean, you never know which French side is going to show up these knockout games, these tournaments like the Champions and Challenge Cup. If they have sort of any sort of shot at the top 14, then they tend to prioritize that tournament over the Challenge and Champions Cup. But yes, very strong performance coming from Toulon. 72 points is a lot of points to let through. So the Saracens should be questioning what exactly happened there. How did they let so many tries through? I mean, Jaminet scoring 32 points, it's unheard of.
Yeah, that's actually flipping impressive, hey, because Sarri's led 35-13 at 30 minutes, and then it just went reverse from there.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So dawning on me now. While it's there, that's shameful from the Saracens.
It's actually shocking that they let a lead like that slip, because it was one-way traffic for them for the first 30 minutes and then 50 minutes of slaughter from Toulon thereafter. So maybe it's not which French team arrives on the day, it's which French team arrives per half. Because they
True.
went nuts here. And I mean, Facundo Issa scored a hat trick in 24 minutes. He scored his three tries, and it was his 150th cap for the Argentinian. So big shout out to him for that. But I see you've put a note in here, Ronnie. How many tries has Nick scored? Well, let me tell
How
you,
many tries have you scored?
an infinite number more than you.
No, that's rubbish. You see, this morning's ridiculous math problem that you sent me just proves that you have no idea what you're talking about. How many tries have you scored?
21.
Yeah, well, that explains why you know the numbers. You're able to count them. I'm not able to count mine.
Oh, you laid me up nicely for that one, hey, Ronnie. Well done, well done. You know, us front rows, though, we're the smartest, best looking, most needed, and talented players in the team. We don't need to score tries. We do all the hard work that allows you lazy eight men to score.
You just lie down after every collapsed scrum. Your favorite pastime is collapsing a scrum so you can just lie down a bit. Idiot. Okay, carry on with the next one.
Yeah, then hell of a score as well. Leinster 62 to nil for the Harlequins. That was a 10 try demolition for sure. But it's so disappointing when you reach the playoff stages to see a lopsided score like that, because you'd imagine that it's somewhat evened out the playing field and it would be much more competitive.
Yeah, I must say I was a little bit surprised at this, but I think Leinster's obviously strong in the URC. We know that, but I also think that the URC is a very, 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 it's got a lot of strong sides, and the teams coming out of the URC, it can be very dangerous, right? So I think that's what happened to the Harlequins. They did not expect such a powerful, strong, and dominant Leinster side to show up. Yeah, 0 points. Just scoring 0 points is absolutely shameful. Not even getting three on the board, or yeah, that's a nice round. Zero, and it sucks.
And I hate to blow the Irish's horns, but you've got to give them credit here. They had a young side get a win down in Durban over a Springbok-laden Sharks team. And a week later, they slapping a 62-0 on one of the top Premiership teams. So the depth there in that Irish team is unbelievable. And I think 15 line breaks to one is a stat that says quite a lot on its own. But even worse, when Marcus Smith is the Harlequins fly half and he's renowned for breaking the line and putting players away. So let's wade into the water then a little bit on the chat of Marcus Smith versus Sam Pendergrass and what that game says for their chances of being the Lions 10. Not looking at Finn Russell, but just these two, whether there's two or three fly halves that go on the tour. After a game like this, is there a big effect on who Andy Farrell's going to pick, Ronnie?
I mean, you can't actually ask me this question because I don't believe Marcus Smith should be playing 10 anyways. So, it's bias coming from me. I'd pick both of them, of course. I would not be using Marcus Smith as a 10, though, rather as a utility back and primarily bringing him in at 15. So there's room for both of them in if I was the Lions coach. But yeah, Sam Prendergast has obviously shown that he's got a bit of BMT, but he's of course he's very young and the Lions tour is a big deal, so can he cope with it? Marcus Smith has now been here for one or two or three or 4 years now, so he knows what he's talking about. He's probably feel a little bit more relaxed with Marcus Smith at 10. But again, I don't think Marcus Smith should be playing 10, and I think Andy Farrell's actually going to agree with me. I'll send him a message after this.
Yeah, Ronnie, I don't know if anyone agrees with you. You speak a lot of nonsense, but it's definitely an interesting contrast. If you do look at them within just the 10 playing field, if you're going to take a fly half like Finn Russell, who is such a game maker and an attacking fly half, maybe Marcus Smith does then miss out. And then, your second choice is the favorite Pendergrass, who is a bit more composed, a bit more structured of a player. Going to be very interesting to see what goes down there because Owen Farrell is still potentially up for selection as well, and I'm very curious to see that play out. What do you
Do
make
you
of this?
reckon, sorry, I'm just going to ask you, do you reckon Andy Farrell is not going to pick his son, Owen Farrell, in what would most likely be Owen's last Lions tour?
I think it's a very complicated decision. And, as much shit as we've given Owen on this podcast over the years, to his credit, he's a
You need him.
top-class player and experience counts. So, I don't know. There's every chance that Owen's going to go with on this tour.
Had England been able to select Owen Farrell, I think they might have won a couple more games in the last year. So that's just my opinion. I would definitely pick Owen Farrell.
And I mean, this isn't even throwing Finn Smith into the argument and another fly half that we'll get onto just now. But I'm curious, as an eighth man who's apparently not lazy like a front rower, close contact meters from Leinster, 407. To 215 by the Harlequins. To me, that was just one-way traffic.
Yeah, teams of course very dominant when they reach up to 400 meters post contact meters. So 215 is well below any sort of target that the Harlequins might have set, but yeah, so it's almost double in favor of Leinster, but the score is not double. The score is 62 points more. So yeah, sorry Leinster, you guys need to focus and understand what happened there. And it's a dysfunctional defensive setup. I don't know how they're going to fix it.
Yeah, and then I think in line with those post-contact meters, Josh van der Vleer getting man of the match was quite telling. He really was on fire, was playing quite wide in the outer channels, fulfilling somewhat of a similar role to what we see Peter Steph doing for the box. He had a banger for the Leinster side. So yeah, it'll be good to see what they can produce now going further into the playoff stages. We know it's been a bit of a bogey for them in the past. But then on to the next game, and this is where we'll have a chat about another fly half that's proving his mettle. But La Rochelle going down at home 24-25 against Munster. So Munster struggling a little bit in the URC, having previously won it. But wow, this was my game of the weekend. Absolutely incredible. La Rochelle started really, really quickly. An early try for Kobalo. It's full of South Africans and Kiwis in that side. And it was disallowed. And ultimately, each team ending up with three tries apiece and it coming down to a drop goal.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to go this way. Like you said, Munster's had their ups and downs and a little bit down of late. And I really thought that La Rochelle at home, that's going to be virtually impossible to do. But Munster pulled it off in the end there. And like you say, it came down to who's got a confident kicker willing to score those extra points. And that's what Munster got. Three tries apiece. I agree. This must have been a great game to watch live. I also missed this game, which is unfortunate, but the highlights say a lot.
Yeah, and notable as well, Munster winning 13 turnovers to 4 for La Rochelle. That Munster back row really getting stuck in. Omahani having a banger there as well. I see you've made another silly note in this one, which I'm not going to give you the grace of reading out here, Ronnie. But how epic is Levani Bhotia for La Rochelle as well? Able to play at flank or at center. He's a player I really enjoy watching. A real beast, not like you when you still played.
Interestingly enough, I could play flank and center at the same time, but they often use me as
Orange Peter.
as the eighth man that could slot in at 10 when needed. So it's just my
Nice
set of
honesty.
skills. But yeah, Levane Bhotia is obviously a very exciting player, and I agree. When they do something crazy like flank slash center, that's always very exciting to see. But he's a very physical player, and that's of course what both sides needed on their side, but obviously Munster was just that little bit more physical.
So now there's another 10 that performed here for Munster. And funny enough, Ronan O'Gara calling him a little fucker after the game for slotting the drop goal. But here we have Jack Crowley slotting a drop goal late in the game. It wasn't to win the game, but it did put it 8 points ahead and keeping La Rochelle out of touch with a try, which they would ultimately get. But this is a player that's shown he's got BMT. He did it in South Africa to help Ireland beat the Springboks in the second test. Now he's slotting one here. He also has to be in the conversation for the Lions 10 jersey, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's obviously, I think 10 is one of those where they've got Andy Farrell. I don't envy him. He's got a difficult choice to make there. There's some real quality, but I wouldn't go for Jack Crowley. I think, yes, he's got that BMT, but I would go with a calmer, more relaxed 10 would be my choice.
Ronnie, this is now a game that I don't want to belabor too much because I'm actually tired of us repeating ourselves so much on the show. But Leon getting a 34 to 21 point win over the Sharks. 5 tries to 3, and the Sharks just spent the whole game chasing it. The first half was dismal. The coaches can pay whatever platitudes they wanted about a young side and experience gain. But from your perspective, this is a tournament the Sharks won last year. The fact that they named such a weak side for a playoff game, does that not diminish the competition and the trophy that they celebrated so tellingly last year?
Yeah, I don't really know how to answer this, and I agree with you. I just it's a sort of a desperation that's evolved into I actually couldn't care anymore. And that's sad. I don't like it when they send these difficult sides. At least, if at least throughout the season start telling us like who's been playing a lot and who hasn't been playing so much and what your goal is for the next week and do something like Rassie does. Rassie likes to explain himself and he likes to make it very clear why he chose them, and perhaps not before the game, sometimes after the game or after the season. But it helps us as fans really understand what's happening here, because I agree, why they aren't prioritizing, playoff games in a competition like that. We fell out of the Champions Cup and now we're in the Challenge Cup and it looks like we don't want to compete. What are we trying to do? Are we trying to save money and by not having to fly up and down? Like what's the deal here? It's very disappointing. It's very frustrating. And I mean, I suppose that's why last year I started watching a bit more Bulls rugby and supporting the Bulls, because I just don't see any sense of urgency with the Sharks, or it's a bunch of individuals playing, and it's frustrating. Like what more is there to say?
Yeah, it's really not great to watch this. And we've touched on this before, but for me, you don't blood youngsters by throwing an entire team out onto the pitch and letting them fend for themselves. It goes wrong. It helps nobody learn. And you just actually damage these guys. You need to be doing it like the Springboks do, where you blood youngsters in and amongst experience, where you put two young wings on, but you've got Villiers at fullback to guide them through the game, not 13 out of the 15 starting team playing, for the first time ever. It's really not helpful to a player's career. And I don't agree that there's stuff to be learned in situations like that.
Yeah, It's us as fans, right? We expect our team to put on a strong performance, right? Even if you're losing, just put on a performance that you can be proud of. And when was the last time you watched that? Like, it's so rare for the Sharks, right? Every game we bloody well watch, we just walk away feeling worse, thinking about, I don't know, I feel like a Welsh rugby fan.
Yeah, that's quite a good description of it, Ronnie. So, quarterfinals coming up this weekend. There's a number of games going on there. Plenty of action. The big one for us South Africans will be the Bulls taking on Edinburgh. Hopefully, the Bulls can get over the line there against the URC counterparts. I'm predicting a narrow Bulls win, Ronnie. What about you?
Yeah, of course, and we'll be watching the Bulls with a keen eye. They're representing the whole of South Africa now. I suppose all of our blood bleeds blue now, right?
Yep, it has to for this one. They're our last hope in the European competition. And then over to some Varsity Cup action. Last round of the Varsity Cup coming up on Monday night. It's a 7 p.m. kickoff at the Daunie Craven Stadium. Marties versus Ikeys after Tucks and Shimless went down in the semis this week. It was actually quite nice to watch some Varsity Cup on Monday night and see that. It's been a long time since we were there, hey Ronnie.
Was it nice to watch rugby while the rest of us suffered?
Yes, it was. You chose to leave South Africa. Don't blame me. The biltong and the braai was good too.
Carry on.
So, just a few other things that have been in the news since we were last on here, Ronnie, and that's the Irish media blaming Jacques Nienaber for Ireland's struggles in the Six Nations and saying he's confused the Irish players by introducing his defensive pattern at Leinster and they are now struggling on the international stage. For me, that is absolute nonsense. I don't know what you make of that, Ronnie.
No, I agree. Like, you can't be blaming Nienaber for anything. He's been part of two back-to-back World Cup winning sides, coach of one, assistant coach of the other. So he knows a thing or two. And if the Irish just can't get with it, then that's tough for them. But you can't be blaming Nienaber for anything.
Yeah, I found that to be quite a stretch. What do you make of Andre Pollard returning to the Bulls, Ronnie, back to Loftus?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think with Vili probably isn't going to last very long, right? So they need another experienced distributor of the ball again in that setup. I think the Bulls have been, they've been in desperate need of a quality 10 for a long time now. Of course, they have their 10s at the moment, but Pollard's just going to add to them. So they'll be very good if you're a Bulls fan, like myself.
Yourself. Yeah, it's definitely this episode's all about the tens, it would seem, because we're talking about them a lot. And I'm going to continue here with Big Dan Bigger announcing his retirement. You remember the big arena he used to do when he was kicking for posts, say, the on the jerseys and Bucky's Buerter mocking it when he played for the Barbars. But yeah, Dan Bigger hanging up his boots at the end of the season for Geelong.
Yeah, I think I because he's been doing podcasts himself as well. So, I've actually imagined him as being retired for quite a while now. And only when the announcement came that I realized that he had yet to actually officially retire. But yeah, good on him.
And then another fly half. Did you see what happened with Finn Russell in the Prem for Bath versus Gloucester? Funny enough, are playing each other again this weekend. But Finn kicked heavy up and under and it went into the stands. And there was a fan that tried to punch the ball back towards the field. And she ended up fracturing her wrist. So not safe on the sidelines either, Ronnie.
Sounds like something you do. You break your wrist punching a ball or something stupid like that.
I was about to say, next time we send you to a game, we'll have to do it with a helmet and some steel-toed boots, but you beat me to it there. Yeah, so she at least got a nice signed jersey and an apology from Finn. I mean, obviously, he did not mean that in any way, and that's not what we're saying here. It's just a crazy accident to happen on the side of a rugby pitch.
Wouldn't mind that happening to me. That'd be a pretty cool reward for punching a ball.
And breaking your wrist. I'll sign
Yeah, look,
pass to you.
for Finn Russell's signature, I'd do it.
What do you make of Russie coming out and saying, we should move the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship together? Something that's been spoken about a lot, the global season, but now with Russie on board, does that make it more of a realistic push?
Yeah, I think a global calendar is, of course, quite difficult because which season do you play it in? Do you play it in our winter, their summer, or their winter, our summer? Like, when does this actually happen? So that's obviously a challenge and probably a con in my book that the seasons won't link up necessarily. But I do like the idea of everyone either being at the start or at the end of the international season or cycle, because too often we when we go over there, they are at the end of their season, so they're tired and we're rusty. So both sides will use that as an excuse, and then the inverse is true when the mid-year tours happen. So I'd like a little bit more of alignment. It doesn't have to fall exactly on top of each other, but it would be nice for all of our URC sides or domestic competitions to be lined up. People know when the internationals are playing and when they're not.
Yeah, I definitely think even just from our side in terms of covering the rugby, to have that alignment would help very, very much. So I would love to see it. Ronnie, onto the Mayfocktuil moment of the week. And this week it's not a clip. It's not something that happened in the games. It's quite simply the glory of watching Clive, Matt, Gregor, and a number of other people being basically told to shut the fuck up by World Rugby. And them announcing that there will be no revision of the bench and the 7-1 split and rules changing there because there is no medical evidence that it causes any injuries to any other players or is any risk of health in the game. So sorry for the crybabies that keep moaning about it. Well done to Fabian from France for getting on board with Rassie. The bench is there. Innovate as you wish. Stop complaining.
And that's it for this week on the Rugby Punted. If you enjoyed the episode, smash that like button, subscribe, and join us again next week for more rugby insights, banter, and the right amount of cheers. Don't forget to join us on Super Brewed 2, where we'll see who's got the best rugby predictions and who's just winging it.